It's time for Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Well, folks, as always, we've talked a bunch of hunting and fishing in today's show. Let's talk about enhancing hunting lands, leases that we might have, our own property. Mr. Josh Hauser, a good friend of mine with Preferred Wildlife Properties, is with us. Let's talk about some things we might could do to enhance our lands right now and make it better hunting and fishing. Josh, thank you, buddy, as always, for being with us.
Luke, thank you for having me again.
Always enjoy it. I've had several positive inputs. You know, they say, I like it. You and Josh visit. You sound like two old buddies visiting, but you get some good points out there. And that's actually what it is, folks, two good friends. But this good friend happens to know a lot about his company. Goes in, and anything you want to do to enhance your property to make it more a better hunting or fishing area, that's what Josh is all about in this Preferred Wildlife Properties company that he has. Josh, food plots. How about food plots? Now, you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, they think food plots in August and September. They wait till then. But if you've got some land that needs to, that has never seen a food plot and you need to clear and get ready, I know that it's best not to wait till the last minute to do the clearing and get it prepped, right?
That's absolutely correct. You know, establishing a new food plot isn't just an overnight success story most of the times, and you got to really plan through that. So, you know, the misconception that we've all had for a long time is that we need these big, huge food plots, and we have these pictures of what we see on TV every now and then, a deer standing out in the middle of a food plot eating, and that's just not the case most of the time. You know, the deer prefer those smaller micro food plots because they've got cover near them that they can get in and around, and believe it or not, growing a small food plot is just as hard as growing a big one because you tend to be fighting with the shade of the trees that are around you, and so you really got to put a lot of thought into the direction that you're facing your food plots, and we try not to build just big, massive food plots anymore. You know, we typically are building an acre or less, and you'll see those doe families and single bucks using them, and then we'll also build them in an hourglass shape. One of the things that will happen is you'll have a doe group on one end eating and a buck on another end eating, and they'll kind of venture across to see who's there, but you can put some pinch points in them and whatnot. But the thing about establishing those food plots is it's just not as easy as everybody wants it to be, especially here in Texas. We don't have the annual rainfall like they do up north where you see a lot of those TV shows taking place that have a lot of rainfall.
Exactly. And, you know, you brought a good point out about the hourglass design, but edge corners, not abrupt corners, definitely not abrupt corners on a food plot, but areas what I don't like in a food plot personally is just a square where you can see from one end to the other thing. But these corners and edges, that gives the animals a little cover. And they're not all just, you know, out in for viewing at one time or for spooking at one time. So I like that idea about, you know, making it not a perfect circle or not a perfect square, I would say, Josh, you know?
That's exactly right. I couldn't tell you the last time I built a rectangle food plot or a circular one. We typically make them a kidney bean shape, or mm-hmm. A lot of times we'll just transform our shooting lanes if we're in deep East Texas working, or even, you know, in South Dallas County on some of the property you and I've been on. We typically don't put shooting lanes in without doing a food plot on them now, because it's just wasted space if you're not. And it's a great shooting lane, but why not put a little food plot in there so that you can hold those deer when they're crossing or they're coming to those food plots and staying. And here again, the key is you got to watch your sun. And so we typically try to orient our stands and our shooting lane placement where we're going to get that good midday sun to get those food plots up. And, you know, like you were saying, starting to prepare them now, even doing spring food plots in in Texas is a great tool, because what you do is we'll plant a spring food plot mix, and we get a lot of ours through Turner Seed, because they're here in Texas. They've kind of tailored their seed to our drought type conditions, and they tend to grow good. And what we'll do is we'll plant those spring food plots. Not that you need a food plot in the spring. You're wanting to have it for the summer when the new growth of the spring has kind of toughened up and gotten hard, where the deer aren't it's not as palatable to the deer. And so we'll put those food plots in to try and get them mature, you know, ready to eat late May, early June. And those that we plant are typically a soybean, a cowpea, iron and clay pea, anything that's going to help restore some nutrients into the ground that will also enhance our fall food plots.
Yep. Well, it makes sense. You know, I visited with Larry Weiss, a good buddy of mine that does campfire talk with me. He's been doing this segment. We've been doing it together for 9 years. And one other thing in the fall and winter on food plots that Larry's brought up a good bit, you know, say you're in an area with a lot of rye or oats or whatever that the deer are already feeding on, their rumens, to digest the different grasses and weeds that they feed on, you know, they get accustomed to something. He's always been a big proponent too at certain times of, you know, if they're on rye, well, you know, that's a good winter. We're talking winter time now, of course, you know, rather than some of the more exotic things. But the bottom line is supplemental feeding, not just to get them out there and put them on the meat pole, but I mean, it helps the herd overall. Josh, you know what I mean? So it's a good tool. And you don't have to have a 10,000-acre ranch to benefit from food plots, do you?
No, sir. As a matter of fact, I'm working on a piece of property, or about to start working on a piece of property that's 7 acres. And the gentleman is a big hunter. He's hunted all over the world, and he's putting in a micro food plot on the back of his 7 acres. He lives out on the front of it, and he knows the benefit of it, and he knows that it's going to draw those deer. And, you know, you don't have to have it huge, and you don't have to have huge acreage. And the other thing, to touch back on what you were saying about Larry Wysoon saying, he's exactly right. If you introduce a clover that into Texas that they don't have here naturally, they're not going to eat it. I mean, it's not something that they're going to go for naturally. It's kind of like, you know, and you and I have talked about the chestnut tree. Historically, deer biologically know what a chestnut is, even though they haven't seen one. And they'll still start going to those because they're naturally drawn to those if you plant them. But he's exactly right. Growing a beet in Central Texas isn't necessarily going to draw a deer.
Probably not going to work, yeah.
But you put that up in the Midwest, and they're going to annihilate a field of beets.
Yeah, you know, apples.
Exactly right.
Yep, apples are another good case in point. I've hunted a good bit in Kansas and up in North Dakota a lot. And where apples are native, you know, I mean, deer will come from a long ways to hit those soured apples that fall off of a tree. But I know I've experimented with apple corn and whatnot. I mean, and even cut apple slices just to try them. You know, I mean, I'm not saying they won't eat them, but it's not what they're programmed to feed on. They have to get used to those introduced type things. Josh, it's time now, one of the prime times, the prime time, I guess, to think about stocking your ponds and maybe not just stocking them, but getting in and revamping your ponds and you know, putting some habitat in there for the fish. That's something else you guys do too, isn't it?
That's exactly right. That's our aquatic food plot. We typically, and we don't have a fish farm ourselves, but we contract those out and we'll help manage those ponds. And so what we'll do this time of year is the time you want to start putting the small bait fish in, because they're going to spawn earlier than everything else. And so start putting the minnows and shad in, And of course, it depends on where you are in location to the closest pond that, or, you know, brook pond that we can get shad out of. Shad are so hard to handle sometimes without them just dying.
Yep.
They're just so fragile. But, you know, we put in bait fish early, and then we'll start adding the bream and the bigger fish the longer we go into the season, so that we're getting into those right times of year to put those in. But right now is the time to start putting your food plot in for all your bass and catfish and crappie.
Well, Josh, we are just about out of time for our segment here, buddy, but I would like you to connect everybody with you. I mean, you guys do, for lack of a better term, enhancement on rural land and anything that people need. I mean, they can call you. How do they make contact with you?
Best way is my cell phone. It's 817-988-7842. Again, that's 817-988-7842.
Well, Josh, you know, and folks, listen, any of our guests that they're most of the name of our show is Outdoors with Luke Clayton and Friends. And the truth of the matter is, through the many years I've been doing this, the vast majority of these folks are friends. Josh is definitely a good friend. But if you ever need you've heard somebody and you're riding down the road and you don't have a pencil to write all this down, chances are you don't, you know. Feel free to contact me anytime, and I promise you I'll hook you up with them. And the best way to do that is catfishradio.org. You know, you can listen to the archive of the show there, and you can actually read a bunch of current newspaper articles that I've got that actually Jeff Rice, my buddy that manages all that he's got archived. Josh, thank you, buddy, and we'll get you back soon. We'll come up with another topic that might enlighten some folks. How about it?
Sounds great. I appreciate it, Luke.
Folks, I always enjoy getting Josh with us. He sheds some light on some topics that a lot of us are interested in, such as food plots today that he talked a good bit about. But now is a good time to prep a food plot. And like he says, a lot of people miss out on the early summer food plots. But the big plus, I think, is that the land is already cleared, the big trees, and you know, it's already ready to plant for the fall food plots, which is a big plus, and that always happens, you know, usually around September. You know, I went on a very fun creek fishing trip recently. If you read my newspaper articles, they run in about 46 different newspapers now across the state, but locally they're in the Greenville Herald Banner. It's close by. I did an article on creek fishing this past week. We went down to the Buck and Bass Ranch, a good buddy of mine. It's not a commercial ranch. It's just the name of his private ranch. But we put some cane poles out, did it old school, set out about 6 cane poles, baited with cut bait, caught a bunch of catfish on those, and then we were tossing little soft plastics and little roadrunners in the creek there and catching, you know, there's still a lot of big sand bass up in these feeder creeks. So we caught one small sand bass, but the rest were, I'll tell you, they were approaching 2 pounds, big old sand bass. And a lot of fish, a lot of yellow bass we caught in there too on these little soft plastics. And that's a fish that a lot of people overlook is the yellow bass, but they are excellent eating. When we got through cleaning all those fillets up and everything, fried them up, I can guarantee you most people couldn't tell the difference from a catfish or a yellow bass, for that matter. They were all just really tasty. Folks, that does wrap us up this week. Do remember, you can always contact me through catfishradio.org. Folks, this is Luke Clayton, and thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. Remember, you can listen to the archive of our shows at ketr.org. Today's show was made possible by the Dallas Safari Club, Smokin' Tex Electric Smokers, Air Force Air Guns, Darton Archery, Snaplock Hunting Blinds, Pyramid Air, Sightmark, maker of the Photon XT, and Catfish Bubblegum.
Luke Clayton has been addicted to everything outdoors since his childhood. He grew up hunting and fishing in rural Northeast Texas. Luke pens a weekly newspaper column that appears in over 50 newspapers. For videos, archived newspaper articles, and more information, visit catfishradio.com. This has been Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.